8 o'clock. Good morning. This is Northern Light for Friday, May 3rd. I'm Monica Sandreski. Todd is away today. It's been a week since the Adirondacks lost one of its most revered forest rangers and a leader among the queer community. A look at the legacy of Rogbi Meekus coming up.
You know, the fact that she was able to open up so many people's minds to the idea of a trans woman being a ranger and being law enforcement in the Adirondacks, which is pretty conservative. She gained so much respect.
Also, New York is phasing out natural gas use in new buildings, but advocates say there's a wealth disparity between who can do it easily and who can't afford the change.
Right now, there's a blind spot, which is that lower income folks just can't get as much of the subsidy that anyone else could get. And so the result is the money is overwhelmingly going to wealthier people instead of going to everybody.
Plus, John Warren checks the trail conditions in the Adirondacks for this first weekend of May. All that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us. Support for Northern Light comes from Seacom Credit Union, serving the financial needs of people throughout northern New York and northwestern Vermont, in person, online at seacom.org, and on your smartphone, and by the Depot Theater in Westport, inviting all to take a journey without leaving the station. Learn more at depottheater.org. This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski. The Adirondacks lost a trans advocate and a wilderness leader last week. Forest Ranger Rogbi Meekus was 52 years old. She helped organize key events for the queer community and was part of some of the biggest search and rescues in the park in the last decade. North Country Public Radio's Emily Russell reports on the legacy that Rogbi Meekus leaves behind.
Talk to anyone who worked with Forest Ranger Rogbi Meekus, and they'll have an amazing story to share. Like how she found a frostbitten hiker this winter who was lost in the middle of a snowstorm. Or how she helped lead the search last fall for the young girl who was kidnapped near Saratoga. Or how she saved a neighborhood downstate from a wildfire years ago.
Rogbi Meekus had reached a point in her career after 25 years where she was in the top tier of a small handful of rangers.
That's fellow forest ranger Rob Projacolo. He remembers a rescue in the High Peaks about a decade ago that Meekus played a key role in. The sun was setting. They were running out of time to be able to hoist an injured hiker out of the woods by helicopter. That's when Meekus tied a harness on the hiker in record time.
Had Robbie not been able to tie that hasty harness on the victim within about 90 seconds, we literally wouldn't have been able to do the hoist, and it would have been a all-night carryout.
Projacolo describes Meekus as a rock star, one of the very best in wilderness search and rescue. But it wasn't always easy for Meekus. She was born in a boy's body, lived nearly all her life in that body. Projacolo breaks down when he remembers what it was like as Meekus struggled with her identity.
It was torture to watch her be tortured by it. And I give her so much credit for having the strength to do what she felt she needed to do.
I interviewed Meekus back in 2020. She knew she was trans from a young age, but said she didn't have any queer role models. She also worried that if she transitioned, she wouldn't be able to do the things that she loved.
There's many reasons why I didn't come out until I was 44. But one of them was because I didn't see anybody else doing the things that I still wanted to do, and I didn't think I could do them. I didn't see any queer rangers. I didn't see any trans climbers.
Mikas had to blaze that trail herself. She had to come out to her family, including her young daughter, as well as fellow forest rangers, police and fire chiefs, volunteer search and rescuers, people like Ron Conowitz.
I really didn't understand it, to be honest. Like, I didn't understand why someone would want to go and transition like that.
Conowitz says he understands now. And even then, it was easy to get behind Mikas. She was so good at her job, such a skilled climber, and really patient with people, always willing to talk to folks that didn't see eye to eye with her. Conowitz says Mikas accomplished so much.
You know, the fact that she was able to open up so many people's minds to the idea of a trans woman being a ranger and being law enforcement in the Adirondacks, which is pretty conservative, she gained so much respect from the hiking public and the climbing public.
Mikas was all about safety in the woods. She'd patrol Cascade Mountain, one of the busiest high peaks, and enforce snowshoe requirements. She'd also monitor hiking groups on social media, where folks ask about trail conditions and what gear they might need. She'd often chime in, really respectfully, and explain the rules of the Adirondack backcountry. She was also a key link between the rangers and the climbing community. Climbers have a long history of helping with some of the more technical rescues. And when Mikas came to the high peaks, Ron Conowitz says she upped the ante on that cohort of climbers.
She came in and wanted to bring all the volunteers back in again, you know, and train. But before you could do that, you had to climb with Robbie.
Mikas was also a mentor to climbers in the queer community. She helped organize the annual Adirondack Queer Ice Fest and advocated on a broader level for LGBTQ rights. She helped organize Pride Fest in her hometown of Keene Valley.
For the queer community, for the trans community, she's the superhero.
That's Paige Humphrey. She says Mikas was a mentor to her. Humphrey met Mikas through climbing. Along with the Queer Ice Fest, Mikas would also organize smaller groups of queer climbers throughout the year. Humphrey says Mikas would set the route and make sure everyone was safe.
We got to climb Real Rock, and it was set up like a top rope. We were all, Robbie got it all done for us. We're climbing. Same with the ice climbing. She made us feel like we could do anything, you know, because we can. Queer people can do anything.
And Mikas was an example of how queer people can be anything. They can be wildland firefighters, forest rangers, rock and ice climbers, and they can be beautiful, feminine people. Her good friend and fellow forest ranger, Allison Rooney, says that balance was an important part of Mikas' identity as a trans woman.
She was the person that wanted to be down in the dirt, getting muddy and fighting the fire with ash smeared across her face. But then she also wanted to go home and put on a cute dress and some heels and go dancing.
Mikas was so authentically herself. Rooney became a forest ranger because of Mikas, because of the example she set in what's long been a male-dominated field. Rooney remembers all the back and forth they had before she ultimately became a ranger a few years ago.
We would sit and have these late-night conversations about life and just what her job was like and how that would fit into my life.
Rooney says every day on the job, she thinks about the skills Mikas passed on to her. Mikas died less than a decade after she transitioned, but she used that time to the fullest, turning the biggest struggle of her life into something other people can strive for. Rooney says setting that positive example for other queer people, other outdoors women, that was a driving force in Mikas's life.
She realized that the role models she was looking for in the climbing community and beyond didn't exist for her, and she wanted to be that beacon for other people who were struggling in the same way.
Rooney says Mikas wouldn't want people to grieve her death too much. She'd want everyone to get out into the woods, go for a climb, have a drink around a campfire, all the things she really loved to do. Emily Russell, North Country Public Radio, Saranac Lake.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's about 10 after 8. Good morning. I'm Monica Sandreski in for Todd Moe today. Coming up, John Warren checks the trail conditions for us on the Adirondacks on this first weekend of May. That's in just a few minutes here on Northern Light, which is supported by the Adirondack Foundation, making grants to nonprofits that address community issues of childcare, attainable housing, career pathways, basic needs, and more. AdirondackFoundation.org. And by NCC Systems, protecting North Country businesses and homes for 50 years, offering cameras, security, fire alarms, and entry control. NCCSystems.com. Music now by Dan Berggren out of Boston Spa. This week paves the way for the use of an herbicide to fight an invasive species in Lake George. It's the latest development in a years-long dispute that's involved state agencies and environmental advocates. Lucy Grinden has the details.
Yesterday, a state appellate court ruled in favor of the Adirondack Park Agency in the legal battle over the proposed use of a chemical herbicide to fight Eurasian watermill foil. That's a type of aquatic weed that's been disrupting the lake's ecosystem for decades. Since the early 2000s, efforts to manage the species have cost more than $7 million. The Lake George Park Commission, a state agency, wants to use Procellacor to fight the milfoil. The EPA says the herbicide poses no risk to human health. But the Lake George Association, a nonprofit conservation organization, is against the use of the herbicide. They've raised concerns that it could harm native plants or lead to the growth of more algae. In 2022, the APA approved a permit for the Lake George Park Commission to use the herbicide to target two patches of milfoil. The Lake George Association then sued, arguing the APA should have held a public hearing first. Last year, a Warren County court sided with the Lake George Association, invalidating the permit. But yesterday, a panel of appellate judges overturned that lower court's decision. Their ruling should clear the way for the Park Commission to begin using the herbicide. Lucy Grinden, North Country Public Radio.
Over the next 16 years, Lewis County will receive almost $1 million in opioid settlements from various pharmaceutical companies. This week, the county put out an online survey asking residents for input on how to use the money. The county joined a class action lawsuit against drug companies in 2018. It accused them of causing the opioid crisis with deceptive marketing that played down the addictiveness and risks of the drugs. The settlement money will establish a new grant program to fund projects that could save lives and lessen the impact of opioids on the community. The county's subcommittees on substance use disorder and mental health will use the public survey results to decide where the money goes. The survey will be open until the end of this month. Verizon will be working to improve cell phone service and high-speed internet access in Akwesasne. The company decided to initiate the project after multiple inquiries from local customers, according to a press release from the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe. Verizon will install 9 miles of new fiber optic cable along Route 37. Work on the project starts on Monday. New York became the first state in the country last year to pass a law banning natural gas hookups in new construction starting in 2026. It's a part of the state's massive effort to reduce reliance on carbon-based energy sources that cause climate change. But what does it take to get your house off natural gas? That's the question two upstate New York residents have been tackling. The process isn't cheap or easy, but it can save money in the long term. And as WSKG's Rebecca Rettelmeyer reports, it might be worth a party.
There's a feeling of anticipation inside Todd Sadler and Laurie Kanwinski's house in Ithaca's Fall Creek neighborhood. On this Saturday afternoon, friends have all been invited to what Todd calls a valve-turning party. The valve he's talking about is a gas connection outside, and he's about to shut it off.
Out to the gas valve out there, and we are going to shut off the gas with great ceremony and discourse. Thank you.
Todd and Laurie built this house 20 years ago with the goal of living sustainably, with low carbon emissions. They put solar panels on the roof and installed a masonry heater, a kind of efficient wood-burning fireplace.
So we had gas for backup heat, hot water, and cooking.
But in recent years, they've made even more upgrades, installing a heat pump and changing out their gas stove for an induction one. They also switched their electricity source to a company that offers 100% renewable energy. That means their connection to the gas supply, which requires burning fossil fuels, isn't necessary anymore. Now they hope to reap some of the rewards. After turning off the gas valve and calling the local utility NYSEG to finalize the disconnection, they won't have to pay that bill anymore.
We're going to end up paying less because it's almost $20 a month just to have this connected.
But their success in going gas-free has also exposed the barriers of this kind of project. Mostly, Laurie says it's expensive.
It's not really an economic justice or environmental justice yet until more people can afford it and do it.
That reflects the reality across the state. A new report from the think tank Wind Climate found that low-income New Yorkers are disproportionately burdened by unaffordable energy bills. But they don't get the same benefit from some emission reduction tax credits, like ones for rooftop solar installations. That's because those credits only reduce homeowners' tax burdens. If you don't owe a lot in taxes, then you can't take advantage of the full incentive. Juan Pablo Velez is the organization's executive director.
Right now, there's a blind spot. And which is that lower income folks just can't get as much of the subsidy that anyone else could get. And so the result is you know, the money is overwhelmingly going to wealthier people instead of going to everybody.
Velez says that while other programs allocate funds specifically for low income residents, those remain difficult to take advantage of. However, that could also soon be changing. The federal government just announced a $158 million investment for New York to fund a rebate program to help families save money on energy-efficient electric appliances. At least half of those rebates will go to low-income households.
All right, so,
as for Todd and Laurie, they plan to advocate for greater access and affordability for emissions reductions upgrades. But that'll have to wait until after the valve-turning party is done.
I think we need to turn it counterclockwise.
Todd holds up his monkey wrench to the crowd of friends and neighbors.
Turn. Turn. Do everything. Turn.
Almost there.
The valve is off. As for the NYSEG bill, well, Todd says he looks forward to not having to pay for that gas connection ever again. In Ithaca, I'm Rebecca Rettelmeyer for the New York Public News Network.
Listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up in just a minute, John Warren checks the trail conditions for us in the Adirondacks. Then after that, we've got some music previewing a show in Burlington next week. And then stick around after the show for Bird Note coming up at 8:42. But we've got to take a look at the weather forecast. Last check, it was 47 degrees in Saranac, 51 in Lake George, 52 degrees in Alex Bay, 51 in Boonville, and 51 degrees in Malone, too. We can expect mostly sunny skies in the forecast today, with highs climbing to about 70 degrees throughout the region. Gorgeous day ahead. Overnight tonight, scattered showers with lows in the 50s. And tomorrow, those rain showers are expected to continue during the day and a little bit cooler, highs in the 60s expected, and a chance of showers likely on Sunday, too, cooling off a bit with lows around 60 degrees. But for a look at how that impacts the trail conditions in the Adirondacks this weekend, here's John Warren with the New York Almanac.
On Saturday, sunrise in the Adirondack High Peaks will be at about 5:42 and sunset at about 8:04. We're expecting some rainy weather through the weekend. Keep an eye on the weather if you're headed into the woods or onto the waters. High peak summits will be breezy this weekend with winds 20 to 30 miles per hour expected. Temperatures there will remain mostly in the lower 40s, but wind chills will be closer to freezing, especially on Sunday. Rivers and streams are below normal levels now, but will be rising with the rain this weekend. Stream crossing shouldn't be a problem, but plan ahead with alternative routes just in case. The Hudson River is at about 4 feet on the gauge at North Creek. At Piercefield, the Racket River is at about 6.5 feet. Lake Champlain, just above Whitehall, is expected to be just under 98 feet this weekend. Most docks are now installed at boat launches, and the gates have opened on most seasonal roads, including the gate on Clear Pond, which provides southern access to the high peaks. Remember, waters remain cold, and mud will continue to be a problem this weekend on backcountry roads and trails. In the Essex chain, the Cornell Road to Deer Pond Road gate remains closed due to a substantial washout on the Cornell Road before the Gooley Access Gate. Chainlinx Road North also remains closed for now. A washout near the beginning of Otter Lake Road in the Independence River Wild Forest will require a high-clearance four-wheel drive vehicle to cross. And in the Saranac Lakes Wild Forest, work continues at the second pond boat launch. Expect delays Monday through Saturdays, as launching is only available on the upstream, that's the left side. And finally this week, a reminder that bird migration is underway. Look for an increase in migrating birds moving through the area, especially in the western Adirondacks this weekend. Those are the outdoor conditions in the Adirondacks this weekend. For North Country Public Radio, this is John Warren from the New York Almanac, online at newyorkalmanac.com.
As John mentioned, this is the time of year that birds are moving from their warmer winter homes back north to aid their journey and to cut down on bird deaths. All state buildings and offices are dimming or turning off non-essential lights at night. It's a program called Lights Out, and you can help migrating birds too by turning off the lights inside and outside your house at night. Or those big picture windows are also confusing for birds. You can break up the visuals of them by hanging streamers or wind chimes. You can find out more details about how to help out those migrating birds at our website, ncpr.org. Taking a look at the Blooms Report, that's a report the state updates every week on which flowers are in bloom throughout New York. This week in the Adirondacks, observers at King's Garden at Fort Ticonderoga report that magnolias are in full bloom while lilacs are continuing to bud. And in the Thousand Islands, observers at Wellesley Island State Park report that the tulips in front of the park's Minna Anthony Nature Center are in full bloom and that there are early blooms on lilacs and while cherry blossoms are budding. Other blooms at the Nature Center include the clove currant, as well as a few violets and daffodils, which you're probably seeing in your neighborhood too. I know I am right in my backyard. You can find the Blooms Report at iloveny.com to keep updated on what's blooming throughout our community throughout the spring and summer. Music now by Michaela Davis. She is a grad of the Crane School of Music at SUNY Potsdam, based in the Catskills, performs throughout the North Country regularly. I saw her at the Norwood Village Green Concert Series, and she's coming to Burlington next Thursday at Higher Ground. This is her song, Home in the Country. in the Country by Michaela Davis. She's a harpist and, like I said, a Crane School of Music grad. Oops. And she's ready to play more, I guess. And a grad of the Crane School of Music at SUNY Potsdam. She's based in the Catskills and does regularly perform in the North Country. And she's coming to Burlington for a show at Higher Ground on Thursday. That was Home in the Country from her latest album, Southern Star. So many events going on throughout the region, including Canton Canoe Weekend. We can't get enough of it. It starts today and runs through Sunday at Taylor Park. It features pro and amateur races of different lengths, plus a chicken barbecue, a DJ, and more. The weekend kicks off with a recreational paddle in the early evening tonight. For a full schedule of events, visit ncpr.org/calendar. And while you're there, you can check out lots of events going on throughout the region in the next month or so, including tonight. It is First Friday in Saranac Lake. It's a monthly celebration of cultural diversity, history, food, businesses, and the arts. Always lots going on there. Find out more at slareachamber.org/First Friday. Or if you're in the Plattsburgh area, head over to the Strand Theater this evening to check out the improv troupe Completely Stranded. This is a long-running improv troupe based in Plattsburgh. And they say if your house is a mess and you need some encouragement to reorganize your clutter, we know what can help. Drop the mop in bucket and let Completely Stranded laugh you into a spring cleaning frenzy as they return to the Strand Theater. That's tonight from 7:30 to 9:30 in Plattsburgh. Also going on throughout the region, you can always find out more at ncpr.org/calendar. In the weather forecast, we can expect sunny skies today with highs around 70 degrees overnight tonight. Scattered showers in the forecast with lows in the 50s. And again, tomorrow, scattered showers continuing into the weekend. It's 50 degrees in Chateauguay, 51 in Fort Covington, 51 degrees in Constableville, and 50 degrees at the Thousand Island Park right now. That is it for the show for the day. Morning Edition continues in just a minute. Then join us between 10 and noon for a roundup of the week's events in domestic and international news. That's coming up on 1A between 10 and noon right here on North Country Public Radio. If you miss an episode of Northern Light, never fear. You can listen back to the archive any place you get to your podcasts or online at ncpr.org. Monica Sandreski, have a good weekend.